is difficult to be the church. It is difficult to let the hope of this scripture wash over us when we have credible scientists warning us about catastrophic climate change and the consequences to society. Our safety, food, and health could all be imperiled. In addition to existential threats, it is not easy to be the church today for other reasons, too. Our culture doesn't support church as it once did, for better and for worse. Statistics show that the largest group of religious people are those leaving faith traditions. And at this time, something like only 5% of the population is looking for a church in our country at any given time. And I also want to add, maybe there's no better time to be the church than now. No better time for Church of the Three Crosses than now. So that is what I want to talk about today. I read a news story this last week about an evangelical pastor named Alistair Begg, a Scottish transplant to Ohio, who has a radio program where his Christianity is steeped in what we call Christian purification. That is, determining what is and what is not moral behavior. He advocates sexual abstinence before marriage, that any LGBTQ relationship is immoral, and the list goes on. Recently, he was asked advice about whether a grandparent should attend a wedding of a grandchild marrying somebody in the LGBTQ community. His advice was to go and bring a gift. The article I read in Religion News Service said, quote, "That advice," he said in a sermon this past weekend, last weekend or the weekend before, "was based on Jesus' command for Christians to love even those they disagree with or disapprove of." Then he quoted the Bible. "Jesus said you are supposed to love your enemies," and said Begg, drawing on a series of biblical texts to claim that Christians should show compassion and not condemnation for those who have gone astray. End of quote. Pastor Begg has been disinvited to speaking engagements, and his radio program dropped from the American Family Radio Network. I, however, feel some hope, deep care for him, and even delight, yes, delight, not in his experience of loss of invitations and community, but for his integrity, knowing he is curious, wrestling, and moving out of his purification thinking into the gray of Jesus' actual teachings, which are complex and nuanced, which ground morality and community, belonging, health, safety, love, and care, not determining those who've gone astray. And while I'm feeling connected to the pastor Begg's, struggling with how to interpret Jesus' words, it is harder sometimes to be connected with those who are closer than farther away. At another church I was serving a few years ago, two young men joined the fellowship hour who had not worshiped with us. I saw them out of the corner of my eye enter the building and go into the fellowship hall directly, and I was shaking hands with people who had been in worship. When I saw them come in and head straight for fellowship hall, I felt anger come over me. I was feeling indignant because that congregation served three meals a day every Saturday for decades. The congregation supported the community in so many beautiful ways. Most often, I understand myself as one who is curious about others. On another occasion, I might have been curious about what need could have been present for these two young guys. Maybe they needed food. Maybe the warmth of the building. Maybe it was longing to be in community. Maybe some power in their world. After the incident, I was regretting my angry reaction. And I was wondering what was going on with me, that I was so cut off from being able to receive them in my heart. Essentially, I went through the very same self-reflection process that is now part of our restorative system here at church that we've been learning about. And this is what I discovered going through that process. I want the church to be seen and understood for what it is, a complex and beautiful community. A beautiful community, yes. Of social service and outreach, yes. I want the church to be understood as interacting and making our communities more fair. Healing, of education, all of these. But what knits all of these together is the possibility of spiritual growth and transformation. And I believe worship is the hub of that possibility. I understand that some people see the church and its ministry as a failed or failing institution. But it is so painful to me when anyone, members or non-members, regulars or visitors, do not see the whole of the church, the possibility for what the church has done and can do. I want people's disappointment. There's plenty of room for expressing our disappointment in the church. But I want people's disappointment to be balanced by knowing all the amazing transformation the church has indeed been part of in society and the world. Healthcare. How many healthcare institutions and research institutions have been founded by churches? Abolition of slavery in North America was led by people in the church. Women's rights were led by people in the church. Civil rights, gender inclusiveness, and gender rights. Sadly, and ironically, my anger and judgment prevented me from connecting and building trust with those two guys that might have led to a conversation with them that might have led them to being curious about worship. This is all to say, being church is not easy for Pastor Beggs and me and many people. It was not easy to be Jeremiah in the 8th century BCE, where the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel was imminent. Jeremiah's prophecy of hope, in fact, turned out to be a failed prophecy. It didn't come true in anything like the near future. There is a plea by the people, "Save, O Lord, your people, the remnant of Israel." And then an answer from God, "See, I am going to bring them from the land of the north and gather them from the farthest parts of the earth, among them the blind and the lame, those with child and those in labor. Together, a great company, they shall return here." It didn't happen. The northern kingdom was wiped from existence in 722 BCE. The kingdom of Judah survived, but it would be 200 years before there was anything approximating peace and security for the people, where Jerusalem was the capital. So where is the good news, you ask? A recent discussion with friends reminded me that perhaps we live most fully when we fail, rather than when we succeed. Failure keeps us in the place of yearning. If we are yearning for excellence in some endeavor, whether it's piano playing or learning chess or running, but we are not improving, we look for the things that will help us get better. We work to improve. We test our capabilities and our limits. But maybe most importantly, we get in touch with what kind of power is worth living for. The power to follow our dreams as fully as we're able, and to do so for our betterment, yes, but never at the expense of the common good. I love this beginning to a poem, maybe you know it, by Emily Dickinson. Success is counted sweetest by those who ne'er succeed. To comprehend a nectar requires sorest need. Congregations of all sorts, from Jeremiah to Three Crosses, go through cycles and experience pain and regret and long for renewal. Like individuals, churches which experience some dislocation and discord sometimes find themselves in a place of yearning and working toward more health. Today, in 2024, I believe we need to mourn that some of what existed, a culture supporting churches in the early to mid 20th century, it no longer exists. We have to let go of who we were to make possible stepping into the future of who we are becoming. E.M. Forster wrote, and I have this quotation on my refrigerator, the side of my refrigerator for years. It got dog-eared and splattered, and finally, somebody actually in another church where I use this quotation sent me a laminated form of this quotation. But this is what E.M. Forster wrote. We must be willing to let go of the life we have planned so as to have the life that is awaiting us. We have to be willing to let go of the life we planned so as to have the life that is awaiting us. This rings true for individuals as well as churches. And yet, we can only move forward when we mourn part of our lives that are over as individuals and a congregation. We cannot live in the past and at the same time live fully toward what God is calling us to be and become. In the words of a teacher of mine, Paul Ricoeur, we must be willing to take religion and the church, an archaic system which faith must always overcome. We must be willing to take religion and the church, even Church of the Three Crosses, as an archaic system which faith must always overcome. We have the chance to delve into the church, this archaic system, and breathe creativity and life and love into it. What is really beautiful is that Jeremiah's poetry, his hope, was repurposed. It didn't come about right away, but it was repurposed. His words didn't have to be literally true for his generation to be true in a larger way. His words have brought initiative and hope. And if you count that Jeremiah lived 2,700 years ago, he brought hope to something like 82 plus generations. We don't have to be stuck in the literalism of whether something happened just the way another predicted. That would be living for success only, for winning rather than living the process of being God's community and accepting failure and hurt and disappointment as part of who we are. Let us listen again to the beautiful beginning of the Gospel of John, which we heard in the lessons and carols on Christmas Eve. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. John tells the creation story in a new and different way. He testifies to the incarnation, God living among us, with us for all time. And ironically, it is only a very little sliver of time that we got to see what God was like in Jesus, 3 short years. But what we saw was something unique and powerful and full of life that compels us even today to a truth that we know exists, a truth we know exists. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. The Logos, the Word, Jesus, the Divine, this power gave power to those who experienced it, power to become children of God. And they realized, every one of those people, and us, we realize we are born of God, each one of us. The faith community around Jesus testified that the Word became flesh, and our faith begs us to work to understand what that means. The word becoming flesh, it defies our separation of spirit and flesh, of divine and human, a righteous realm and a sinful realm. Our categories of what is possible and impossible are blurred in the incarnation. John's story is Genesis, the creation story, all over again. And it's Genesis with a twist, a very good twist. A couple of decades ago, Brian McLaren and Richard Rohr, Brian from an evangelical Christian tradition, Richard Rohr from an Orthodox Roman Catholic tradition, they developed a friendship over their concern about the brokenness of the church. The church is broken, they say, when it is either an evacuation plan or an escape into private bliss, a ticket to heaven or a place of self-indulgence. But instead, they said they were seeking to find a spiritual transformation in our world. We're on a quest, they write, to find out how to have an engaged expression of a deep spiritual life that makes a difference in a world on fire. Alistair Begg, Brian and Richard, I, and I'm guessing you, are on a path of lifelong learning, of gentleness, love, looking for serenity, and nonviolence. We have glimpsed this in Jesus, and we are yearning to live into this possibility. I believe Three Crosses is on the same path. I believe God continues to create through each one of us. Each one of you has the capacity to breathe life and love into this fellowship and to welcome people wherever they are on life's journey. Your doors are open to welcome people who are looking for a spiritual home. May it be so. Amen. Let us join our voices in hymn number 329, verses 1 through 3.